Sit down, stand up.
Okay, welcome to Sit Down, Stand Up. Stand up.
I'm Tim.
Sit down, stand up.
You know, we sit down with stand up. And we find out things that we probably never knew before.
And things that we probably don't want to know.
Don't want to know. And tonight, we are here with Mike Preston. Hello, Mike.
Hey, the king of things you don't want to know. I've got a long list.
Well, because you're the array of entertainment cubicles, we'll call it.
Oh, okay.
No, stand-up comedy, correct?
Yeah.
Television?
Yep.
You count cable access, yeah. And we do count it.
Yeah. we are counting it today.
Yes.
Right. Okay. And, well, I count it as a separate thing, but you have interviewed more people, rock
yes.
stars, celebrities, porn stars,
politicians.
I didn't want to emphasize the porn stars.
Because that's all that everybody remembers. We did the show for like 15 years. I interviewed Rod Blagojevich, Ralph Nader, Ernest Borgnine.
Enough for those porn stars.
But everybody always remembers, how can we do a show about strippers? Well, it's not. It's just once in a while.
Well, here's the thing, and we'll talk about this because I know we've talked many times before. We've worked many times in the past, as Tim as well. We know that you started about 89,
yeah.
88, 89.
Yeah.
But we'll go back to that a little later. Let's go to Psychobabble. Psychobabble started, became your creation when? What year?
2002. Had seen a lot of, when I lived out in LA from 98 to 2001, and there were some, let's call them progressive cable shows on out there where they were doing all kinds of bizarre stuff that I didn't think you could do on television, let alone cable access. So when I came back here, then another guy we know, who will remain nameless, was doing a cable show, and I thought, it can't be that hard. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, we know so many talented people, you guys included, who, stand-up is just like a tenth of what you do. You do characters.
Right.
And I'm a big fan of the old Fernwood Tonight Show,
yep.
where so many great people, Tom Waits and all these guys, would be on as characters. And it just seemed like, you know, why aren't there any TV shows like that, original content going on in Chicago? You know, we know a guy, Mike Toomey, who does, you could do a show, different show every week just with the characters
who?
He does.
What's his name?
I don't know. I don't even know if he's still in the business, but he's
a
very, I think he went to regular television, commercials.
Well, you know, and it's interesting. Let's mention that the fact that we are here tonight, we are actually, I wanted to say where we're doing these from so that when people listen, or even when we go back, we go, oh my God, that's right. This one is being done in the woman's dressing room at the Pheasant Run, the main stage theater. Mm-hmm. We are doing TVME tonight with Mike Toomey. Mm-hmm. And Zany's is right across the way, which we've all played at many, many times.
Right,
right.
You came, who did you, how did that even happen? Who did you approach to have
the cable? Well, I believe it was AT&T Broadband at first. The cable thing has changed names and ownership so many times. And it was a real uphill battle. I did not realize, had I known how much work it was going to be just to get it off the ground, we had to take classes. I had a group of people that were interested in the beginning until I became a control freak and a tyrant. So I had about six people with me who took the classes. And you got to take these stupid classes where you learn about three-point lighting and all these obscure things that I never wanted to know about.
So you really took this seriously that you had to have classes.
I wanted to get my little laminated card so I could use their equipment for free. And that's what you had to do.
This is what I'm talking about. This is the stuff we don't know.
I
had no idea that you had to go through. All the years I've known you, we've never talked about this.
Yeah.
So you had to go through how many classes?
Like 6 weeks of classes. It's like, come on.
To learn to point a light at somebody?
Well, and stuff that we never use anyway. I'm like, I'm going to be out there behind a desk talking to weirdos. I don't need to know what's going on. I don't want to know what's going on in the booth.
And that's the stuff you need to have some education on, the
right.
Weird people.
Oh, yeah, I got that. Well, and that was one of the original things. I knew my background's kind of in social work, and I knew a lot of people with issues who I thought, you know, interesting to get them out there on a talk show. My very first co-host was a bipolar guy who, when he was in a manic phase, was really funny. He weighed about 350 pounds, mm-hmm. and he'd dance around like John Belushi and be funny. Unfortunately, when we started taping, he was not in a manic phase. He was on the low end of things and me. mean and nasty. It was like doing a show with an alligator. He was always sniping at people instead. It was just, and somewhere during, I think, the fourth show, he just, in the middle of it, he took his microphone off and stormed off the set.
When did Matt Cassane come on?
he was on during the first season, and Marge almost made him cry.
Oh, well, let's talk about that. Marge Takacs, who did comedy for a long time with the
Untamed Shrews. Yeah, yes, thank you. Yeah.
And of course, I knew we both worked with Marge before she even got with the Untamed Shrews. Mm-hmm. But I, every time that I did Psychobabble, Marge was your co-host.
And just a brilliant, brilliant foil. I mean, I could be the straight man. She's a really, really funny, biting, dirty person, so I could be like this straight laced nerdy white guy like I am, and she was the more, as she said, she brought the testosterone to the set, you know, which, okay, fine, but it worked. I mean, she understood comedy. I did have another co-host in the interim who did not understand comedy timing, and he would be constantly stepping on people's punchlines and things. I think you met him.
What was his name?
Ruggedly Handsome Jerry.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. He had some good hair. That's all I remember.
Yeah,
about
yeah,
Jerry.
But it was all about him. I would be interviewing someone like the very famous Lance Vegas, and all of a sudden Jerry would be rolling on the floor because he wasn't getting enough attention or something. Although the funniest part, the time I lost it was when I was interviewing the very famous Lance Vegas, mm-hmm. and Matt Cassane had been on the show prior doing Johnny Chicago, so he was in the back room changing. And while I'm interviewing Lance Vegas, Matt runs out in it. Matt, again, weighed about 350 pounds, and he runs out in his tighty whities in front of the cameras and starts dancing and fondling himself. And I thought I was gonna keel over, and I was laughing so hard I was wetting myself. It was just so bizarre and inappropriate, and
need of attention.
Exactly.
A lot of those
exactly.
Folks,
so. Yeah.
And so you were Lance Vegas on the show. Who else were you on?
I was the very famous Lance Vegas. I was Tommy Fark.
Yes.
Tommy Fark was another old rock and roller.
Yes. Your son was Lance Vegas Jr.
Yes. My son Jordan was a musician.
He
was
Lance Vegas Jr. You guys, I remember one Christmas you did a song about Taco Bell to the tune of Silver Bells.
Yes, we did Taco
Bell. It's ripping holes in my tummy.
Right.
Again, musically talented. This boy can really sing, your host, Tim Benker here. Well, and, you know, and that's what I enjoyed. It was so different. It was standing away from the stand-up thing and seeing these guys stretch out. Our friend John DeCross did, what was the person's name? What was her?
Ramada
Ayn.
Ramada Ayn?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Yeah, who went to Roland Harper High.
And that's amazing you remember that.
Well,
stuff.
I edit these things, so I have to go over them time and time again.
And they get plastered into your brain.
Oh, yeah.
Who played my husband? Was it Tim?
Yeah.
You were doing your husband.
Piso Mojado.
No. that was his cousin. I was Prohibido Fumar.
Okay, and Piso Mojado, yeah.
And, you know, and what's interesting is, and from our point of view, it was a great opportunity. It was not stand-up.
Right.
We just got to have fun.
Like we're doing now. It's just kind of free-form. There was no script. By the way, funniest line from that show is when you two were playing Hispanic gentlemen and women, and I was cutting to the clip, and now we're going to have an interview with Lita Ford. And Tim said, "It's not a big Ford. It's a Lita Ford."
Once in a while.
But you know what's cool? And I'm going to compliment you, but I've told you this before, so I don't feel bad about it. You're a great interviewer.
Thank you.
You really are, because I've seen you do, a lot of times you're behind the camera. And I'm not talking about on the set when you're interviewing us. Although, what's really cool, and I know this from every time we've been a guest or whatever, it's imperative that the person you're working with gets the timing, understands, hey, it's not about me this moment. I got to let them be fun.
Right, right.
And you do that really well. But I've seen you interview people, videotaped clips that you would add on to your show, and I thought they were great.
Well, thank you. I love doing that. Boy, that would be such a sweet gig to have. I do my homework, and I found out that when you're interviewing people, they appreciate that. One of the first musicians I interviewed was Tommy James of the Shondells, you know, Money Money and all that stuff. And I afterwards, I got the impression he was used to people who had only heard him on the radio and hadn't done any research interviewing him, because he was really grateful that I knew what his background was.
Oh, nice.
So, great story, man. If you ever get a chance, his record company was a front for the Columbo crime family. It was. He's got a book called Me, the Mob, and the Music, and it's just fascinating where he's, he would go into his record company office and Vinny the Chin Gigante would be in there, you know, and stuff. And it was just, you know, they were ripping him off, but there was nothing he could do about it. What are you going to do, complain?
Right.
You know, so, yeah, it's a fascinating story anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, and you look back on it 15 years, and it is right, because Tim mentioned all the... I am amazed when you put those clips together, and you go, oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, all the people that are dead.
Yeah, Mickey Rooney.
Davy Jones from the Monkees. Yeah, it's like, oh, my God, a memory lane, man.
Well, what was the most dangerous interview that you ever did?
Most dangerous?
I mean, there had to have been something that...
Well, we had guys. Well, I would delegate a lot of times because
way
I
to go.
Do that.
And they can't teach that.
Oh, no. And you find people will take jobs if you. But we were at a biker thing one time where there was a helicopter available, and I thought this would be a great aerial shot. But I'll be damned if I'm going up in a helicopter. Sure enough, one of my guys, I'll do it. I don't care. And then like other times, like we would interview Steve Mongo McMichael, and it's like, nah, I ain't talking to that. He might
That's
hit
right.
me, so you interview him. We sent some people up in a balloon one time. You know, again, I'm staying on the ground.
Hard pass for me too.
Now you called it cable access, which it is.
Yeah,
but you have to be amazed sometimes at how much pull that has.
Yes. Yes, we, I would make press passes, you know, because I've got a computer, I've got things, you know, so, and I would, you know, laminate them or put them in a laminate holder and walk around with those things, and security guards don't always know. Sometimes they do. If you're at a big, you know, heavy security concert, you're not going to get backstage with the Rolling Stones on a homemade pass.
Right.
But some of these other events we went to, you will. And then other ones, because we were television and I prearranged it with their publicist, they would give us full access passes. We interviewed Ted Nugent at Alpine Valley one time, and we had full access passes. And I had broken my toe the night before, so I was kind of gimpy. So the staff was driving us around in a golf cart. And I'm riding around on a golf cart being treated like the king. And I'm like, do these people know I just made this show up?
That's what I love.
Yeah,
that's what I absolutely love.
It was
defining psychobabble over and over and over again.
Yes.
Really.
Yes.
That's funny. Yeah. So, all right. So there wasn't anything that was too dangerous. But no, it is good. Piggybacking on what John was saying, you are a good interviewer.
Thank you.
But I've seen you also get the most out of the people that you are interviewing. Aside from people who weigh over 350 pounds, who do you think just shone? Are they shined? Which way?
I don't think we can say that.
Who was illustrious that you really surprised you?
You're talking about the celebrities or of our comic friends?
It could be anybody. You thought this is going to be a bust, and it ended up being a nice surprise.
Well, not necessarily. I didn't think it was going to be a bust, but I'm always surprised when people can do characters. Our friend Tim Baker, he came in the show. I was trying to quit the show for like 8 years, but it was like the mafia. They keep dragging me back in, and somebody would come along that had a new twist or something. And I was running out of friends who wanted to do characters, and then Tim Baker came along, and he's got. I said, "Can you do characters?" Yeah, I got this. I got this. I got this, and he was great. You know, so we.
I think I was on one of the first shows with him when he played. I can't remember that guy's name. He was like the nunchuck guy.
Stash.
Stash.
Where he's a hippie, a burnt out.
And I loved watching Marge because Marge didn't know what to make of him.
Right.
She was not sure of what was going on. And I have to admit, I was in total awe because he was so committed to that, and he did it great.
Nice. Yeah.
He did it so well.
And he also, he does another character. I don't want to get too political, but he does Dick Richardson, who is a kind of a nut political character. But as the atmosphere changed and real life became nuttier, it became less, you know, far-fetched that this character. It's just, you know,
but that's
weird.
This is a perfect segue because you just finished filming the movie.
Yeah, we, you know, we wanted to do something. We're getting tired of, again, cable access. It's, as I say, it's like showing home movies in a closet. Even if they're great, nobody's watching. So, we wanted to do something different. And there's all these film festivals. You know, there's no cable access festivals. Well, why don't we do, you've got these characters. Let's pick one and do a film. So, and it, because of the nature of video, the way it looks, it's a documentary style. So it doesn't have to be, you know, CinemaScope or whatever the effect. Right. So, and one of my favorite filmmakers is Christopher Guest, who does all those Best in Show and Waiting for Guffman and all that stuff. So it's just, Let's have a loose storyline and throw in a bunch of improv.
You know, and you and I have talked about this, but you take a show that you turned me on to, Trailer Park Boys, which I had passed on forever. And then Mike goes, "You got to watch it. It's so cheaply made and ridiculous." And I watched, 12 seasons or whatever it was? I could not stop.
Right.
And it is literally cost a dollar to make.
Right.
But it was so good. And I thought, you know what? This is going to, I think this will be good.
We're going to talk a little bit more to Mike Preston. I'm Tim Becker, along with John DeCoste. We're going to break for a second. We'll be back.
Hello, Northwest Carpet Cleaning.
Hi, I'd like to get my carpets cleaned. Are you guys any good?
Well, we've been serving suburban Chicago since 2002, but don't take my word for it. Look online at all the positive reviews from satisfied customers we've gotten over the years.
You know, I was on your website, and I didn't see any pictures of puppies or babies laying on clean carpets. I mean, what's the deal?
Northwest Carpet Cleaning has always used child and pet safe solutions to clean and disinfect your carpets. So every customer gets the special treatment, not just the kids and puppies.
Yeah, about that. My baby wears diapers, but my puppy don't. You know what I mean? Can you help me with that?
We sure can. We can treat and condition whatever stain the puppy makes on the carpet with our Supreme Spot Treatment.
Spot Treatment? Well, how did you know my puppy's name was Spot? Hey, that's great. Hey, you got a Mickey Jr. treatment?
Call Northwest Carpet Cleaning for a free estimate, 847-255-6110, or visit our website at northwestcarpetcleaning.com.
Good. We are back with Sit Down Stand Up with Mike Preston again, Tim Banker to my left. We've been talking about both Psychobabble and your latest movie, Dick Richards, that you put together, and you're in the process. Citizen Dick, I'm sorry, yes, which is so good. But we kind of let off with when you started comedy in 89. You have an interesting, because you did leave Chicago. A lot of us didn't leave.
Right.
So let's first go back to 89. How did you even do
it? Well, it's funny because you were talking about Trailer Park Boys being made so cheaply. That's kind of what inspired me. I could make a movie. And with stand-up, it was kind of the same thing. In 88, 89, it was all over television, and some of it was just horrible.
Right.
And I would watch it, and I go, I could do that. I could do that. And finally, it's like, you know, there's all these open mics around. I probably should go do that. So I did, you know, if it had not gone well the first time, I probably would not have stayed with it because I'm that kind of guy. But it did go well the first time.
Where was it?
The Funny Bone in Schaumburg, which their Monday night open mic was at that time hosted by Stephen Leo. You guys probably.
Oh, yes.
I did not know them. They went on to write the Santa Claus and stuff. But they would host it every week, but they would only put up people that they knew. So I would go sign up every week and wait and wait and wait and never get on stage. And then one night they weren't there and Bert Borth was there. I was like, man, I'll put you on. I don't care.
Oh, thank you.
Which, and I went again, I was so prepared because I had been coming every week and I was, you know, just on autopilot, but I had it memorized. So there, you know, was no, what was I going to say next? But it went really well and it encouraged me to keep doing it, you know, so it was a lot of fun.
I remember the first time that I worked with you was downtown Zanies, and your opening joke, which had already been told to me by several people, including Bert Haas, who general manager, and Larry Reeb, who raved about you. This new guy, Mike Preston, with his mullet haircut.
Yeah.
And it was something about the Backstreet Boys, and you woke up in a dream, you know, whatever.
In a puddle of my own vomit or something.
Thank God. It was
just a dream.
Oh, my God. It was so different at the time. But so you're in Chicago. You kind of said, when did you leave? When did you decide to pick up and go?
Well, boy, that, you know, it was one of those things people always say. If you're going to be in the, doing this, you need to go to Los Angeles. And I never really wanted to move away. You know, I like the Midwest and stuff. But I had a woman I had dated out, who moved out there. And, you know, all the doors were open. Mm-hmm. So she said, come on, well, it'll be great. So in 1998, I moved out there February of 1998.
Was she an actress?
No, she was a waitress at a comedy club. Can you believe that? I'm a stereotype. But and that went downhill right away. Nice girl, but I was stayed with her for 4 months and couldn't get a, whatever. It just did not work out. And I again fell back on my background in social work. I'm looking for a place to live, and there's a live-in position at a group home in Encino. And okay, and it was great. I was able to live in the valley rent free with my own like little studio apartment on the back of the house. I had to work a lot, so I was not able to hang out and you know, down at the comedy store or whatever. But I was able to stay in Los Angeles for 3.5 years and kind of, yeah, had a lot of fun, did a lot of things, you know. But
good age to be out there. Good
time not to be out, you know, there. Not really, because I was 38 when I moved out there, and I was already past you know what they were looking for in any capacity. Plus I didn't have a plan, right. You know, I was just going because they were so, you gotta go to LA, and I had no game plan. I didn't even have headshots. I was talking to some comic friend of mine who said she would recommend me to her manager or whatever, and I said, oh, I don't have any headshots. She goes, wow, you really thought this thing through, didn't you? No, I guess I didn't.
That's good. Well, we're going to ask you the Dirty Dozen.
All right.
I don't know if you've heard about the Dirty Dozen. We have questions that we ask most of our guests on the
show.
How
dirty can I get? Well,
the questions.
No, WG, I won't. Yes, I won't. You know that, right. So that's good. Yeah. The
I'm going to take my pants off for this segment.
That you can do.
Right.
You can
do. Nobody can see that.
That's not an issue.
Which club that you've ever performed at had the most talent, I'm saying with air quotes.
Well, you know, and I heard the show you guys did with Mike Toomey, and I would have to concur that it was the Comedy Cafe in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. But it was because the guys who ran it were such sexist pigs that they they hired the staff with that in mind. And when I first started working there, the waitresses were still wearing short skirts and high heels.
Oh, wow.
Like it was a strip club, and they're trying to maneuver these drink trays. It's like, come on, you guys, it's not 1962 anymore. Let's go, you know. But yeah, but they were very lovely women, mm-hmm. you know, working hard.
Very good.
What was the hottest room you've ever performed in?
And again, the Comedy Cafe.
Isn't that amazing?
It was, you know. I was so glad I, you know, cut my teeth in Chicago, where you kind of had to work. You know, audiences would not just, you know, give you the time of day. But up there in Milwaukee, they're like Chicago without the attitude. They were just, you know, great. It's like throwing gas on a fire. It's like, man, they're laughing at everything, and it was great. It's not that way anymore. I'd been there a few years ago, and yeah, kind of gone downhill.
Yeah
so, but changed. At the time, it was just a treat to go up there.
Oh, you mentioned your influence as far as television and movie making is concerned. How about stand-up?
You know, again, I like the weird guys. Gilbert Gottfried and Stephen Wright, I would say. You know,
nice.
When I started, 89, there was a plethora of Seinfeld clones.
And there were a lot of them, too.
Yeah, they were there. An abundance. And, you know, guys who would go, hey, have you seen this? And I'm thinking, and it was
just,
you know. I think
the word is plethora.
Yes, yes. Maybe. But it's like, oh, I don't want to see any more of that. But then Gilbert, you know, would be doing his Jesus meets Nazi jokes. You know, and it's just, I love that stuff. So weird, you know. So love it.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to, yeah, now that's interesting. That was your biggest. So who do you, well, let's see, what was the question? Who does everyone else think is funny, but you don't?
Boy, I would say probably 90%. I'm just, you know, and again, it's not. There's nothing wrong with them or something wrong with me. I prefer dark, twisted. I didn't expect that. And with a lot of comedy, the general public can watch a comic and go, oh, I didn't expect that. And us three will be going, oh, yeah, I knew he was going there.
Right.
And
right.
it just kind of ruins it for me. It's like, you know, I've seen enough generic stand-up. You know, again, going back to the very beginning of that open mic at the Funny Bone in Schaumburg, one night, I don't know if you guys remember Sick Vic. This open micer.
I don't.
He had one of those Teddy Ruxpin teddy bears where you had a tape recorder in and you could make it say whatever.
Right.
So he had the bear on a stool, and the bear was a junkie, and the bear was talking about how bad it needed a fix. And then he whips out a hypodermic and he's shooting. And the audience was mortified.
Yeah.
But I'm on the floor dying. I'm like, oh, this is brilliant.
So you like your comedy like you like your licorice, dark and twisted.
Yeah, and a cup.
Wow. That was good.
A venue that is still on your bucket list.
To do?
Yeah.
Wow.
If you say the comedy place.
No.
In Milwaukee. Wow,
you know, how about the Chicago Theater? Theaters, I have found doing theater gigs, are just the best. Mm-hmm. Again, those audiences, they've paid a premium ticket price, so they have an investment in the show, and they're there to laugh. And you aren't going to get some drunk who started drinking at noon that day
right.
coming in and yelling at the stage. So, and I've only been to the Chicago Theater once, but it's lovely. So
it's a beautiful venue.
Yes.
Who's the nicest person you've ever opened for?
Nicest boy. You're talking as far as big names?
Yeah, I think we're big name celebrity nicest
boy. Tommy Chong was a real sweetheart, mm-hmm. you know, and again, not my style of comedy or my favorite, but just a nice guy. I was working with him here, and this was, there were green rooms out in the hallway, and they had not finished construction, so there was no roof on the green room. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, that's right.
It was, and
just walls.
We're sitting in there between shows, and some people had brought Tommy, you're going to be surprised, they brought him some marijuana.
Wow.
A marijuana cigarette.
Smokes, right.
And, yeah, I guess he does.
Does he smoke a plethora?
Well, he asked if he could light up in there, and I said, well, the smoke's going to, you know, it's going to go right, and people are going to be able to smell it, and then... And I stopped myself. I'm like, when did I become the guy that's telling Tommy Chong not to smoke? I said, you guys do whatever you want. Now I'm going to take a walk.
You thought you were still in Encino, right?
Yeah, am I, a narc?
Well, he was the nicest. Who was the least palatable?
Steve Bluestein.
Oh, my goodness.
Do you know him?
I didn't even finish the sentence, and you knew Steve Bluestein.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Just, and those are the things you remember when you're a young pup starting out and looking up to people, and when they treat you really badly, it's like, I am never going to be like this guy. Right. But he was just, I guess he was an insult comic. He billed himself as the new wave Don Rickles, because that really caught on. He was just, he was as nasty or nastier offstage as he was on, and just a really unpleasant person to deal with.
Well, what do you have coming up?
What do I got? Well, we just finished, we're finishing Citizen Dick. I'm putting the music in. A friend's brother is doing the music, and hopefully have it edited up within the next few weeks, and then start trying to submit it to film contests, you know. And so we'll try that.
What do I like about this, and we're going to end this, I know, but it's kind of cool because you've been doing this. This is your 30th year.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
So 30 years, and, you know, we all ride this, you know, on a graph. We don't get the big spikes or whatever. But I honestly think this is going to spike. I think this is your moment.
Oh, good.
I think this is, I think the, what is Citizen Dick?
Citizen Dick.
I think it's going to grab some attention. You should be able to do more of that. You should be allowed to do more of that.
I hope.
Well, thank you very much. Always a pleasure, Mr. Mike Preston.
Treat.
Preston, how about that? And sit down stand-ups
with Tim Banker.
And I'm John DeCall.
And we're, of course, live at Pheasant Run Resort.
Yeah, that's right.
And we'll see you guys next time.
Thanks so much.